Cancer survivorship, it's a topic that you really don't hear a whole lot about. And that's interesting in itself because more and more people are surviving cancer. It's not a death sentence anymore. In many cases, it's a life sentence. You might be surprised to know that here at the National Institutes of Health, we actually have an Office of Cancer Survivorship. And with us right now here on NIH Research Radio is the director of the Office of Cancer Survivorship at the National Cancer Institute, Dr. Julia Rowland. Thank you for joining us today.
Bill, it's lovely to be here today, and I really welcome the opportunity.
Tell us a little bit, if you would, about what the mission is at the Office of Cancer Survivorship.
Well, the ultimate goal of the office is really to enhance the length and quality of survival of all of those who carry a diagnosis of cancer.
I know when you hear about people that survive some horrible event, you hear about the guilt of survivorship. Does that enter into cancer survivorship at all?
That's certainly an issue for many individuals who carry this history. You know, why me? Why did I do well? Why did I recover from this? Why am I still here when there are so many others like me who have succumbed to this disease? So certainly there is an issue of that. And along with it, of course, is the fear that many survivors tell us they live with on a day-to-day basis, and that's that the disease will come back.
Do you ever get over that?
Well, you know, that's a really good question. I guess the in general, people will tell you it never really goes away. But many people find they can park it somewhere and get on with their lives and live full, rich, and rewarding existences. For some, though, it's a real hurdle. Daily reminders, and certainly we've seen a lot of stories in the press lately about public figures talking about their illness coming back. And when those events occur, that raises a lot of anxiety in people who are survivors themselves.
How did the National Cancer Institute come about the decision to start this Office of Cancer Survivorship?
Well, the office was actually established back in 1996 in direct response to compelling and articulate response out of the advocacy community saying it's wonderful you have all of these advances, the earlier detection, better treatments, more supportive care, and that more people are living long-term with this illness. But what we don't know is to what you're returning individuals. What are the kinds of problems that individuals face after treatment, and what are you doing about that? Essentially, it was a challenge back to the NCI to say, congratulations on your success, but you need to be cognizant that cancer cures and care come with a cost.
And what got you interested in this particular field?
Well, I actually stumbled into this area in some ways in my graduate career. I was doing research in developmental psychology, so I was very interested in illnesses that occurs across the life course, when in a time of an individual's life do they become ill. And one of my professors referred me to a physician who was doing research at that time up in the Bronx looking at women who are breast cancer survivors and talking to them about their quality of life. And I was instantly hooked. I thought this was a fascinating area and lots of work to be done.
What is on the horizon in the realm of cancer survivorship? What research are you guys doing? What are some of the exciting things we're going to be hearing about in the near future?
Well, I think some of the exciting things that we're beginning to look at, partly it goes back to the mission of the office, which is tell us a little bit more about what happens to individuals post-treatment. So what has happened in the last 10 years since the office was created was that the medical community now recognizes that cancer survivorship, that post-treatment period, is an area of unique issues in and of itself, and that's very exciting because it's now placed this solidly on what we sometimes refer to as the cancer control continuum. Has its own unique issues, and there are researchers and clinicians who are addressing specifically that particular piece of recovery and wellness. What's been very exciting is as we listen to the voice of survivors, recognizing that we need to attend to their health behaviors after cancer, and that interestingly, some relatively simple kinds of things, recommendation to stay physically active after your cancer diagnosis, may have important impact on disease recurrence and possibly long-term survival. So those kinds of findings are very provocative, very exciting, because this is something everybody could do.
And this goes beyond the cancer patient, him or herself. This is everybody who knows and loves the cancer patient.
Absolutely. Back in 1986, a group of about 24 individuals gathered in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and created what is now known as the National Coalition for Cancer Survivorship. And when they did that at the time, and they looked at how a survivor was essentially labeled in that earlier period, the medical definition for a survivor was someone who had remained 5 years disease-free. And in their wisdom, they said, this is no longer acceptable because you can't not be thinking about the quality of life issues for 5 years. You can't decide 5 years later, gee, I would have liked to have had kids.
You're thinking about those every day.
Absolutely. Mm. And they need to be part of the decision-making in your care. And when they decided that they needed to change that definition, it was the coalition that gave us the language that we use now for survivors, that anybody who is diagnosed with cancer may refer to him or herself as a cancer survivor from the moment of diagnosis.
From day one.
Day one for the balance of their lives, whether they want to call themselves a survivor or not, but they're entitled to that. And there was two important messages they want to convey. Hope, you have a life, you have the opportunity to think about a life after cancer. As you said, we're turning these in more and more into either curable diseases or more often chronic illnesses that you can live long-term with. Included under that larger umbrella, were family members and caregivers because they recognize they're part of this journey and often an integral part of it.
Well, I know as a person with a chronic condition myself, and the listeners to this podcast know that I have Parkinson's disease and have been going through some clinical trial surgery for that. If you're not careful, you tend to think of everything that happens in your life in terms of the disease. How do you convey to a cancer survivor that there's more to you than the fact that you had cancer?
That's a really important point, Bill. And you know, as you know, as you talk about your own experience with Parkinson's disease, cancer survivors will tell you, well, you know, after this diagnosis and treatment, a headache is no longer a headache. It's mm-hmm. metastatic brain tumor, or you know, this is what you worry about. And that's part of the territory. It's you know, we talked earlier about fear of recurrence. It's trying to find some place to park that worry and but get on with your life. And that's, you know, one of the challenges that individuals must, you know, deal with and, you know, find some comfortable resolution around if they're going to move forward.
We hear so much about the fight to research causes of cancer, the research for new treatments, preventions. We don't really hear enough, I think, about what to do when you've had cancer and what to do afterwards. And that's why I think that this is a very valuable discussion we're having today. What are some of the web resources that are available for folks? Your own website, for instance.
Absolutely. Our website, so the URL for that is www.survivorship.cancer.gov. Again, www.survivorship.cancer.gov, where you can come and find out the kind of research that we're supporting with public dollars here in the United States. Very, you know, cutting-edge research here. We also have on that site links to major reports that have come out. There have been, in the last 5 years, five major reports addressing the issues of cancer survivorship. So this is an issue that's really garnered public attention. People are excited about it. And these major reports, we're hoping, are going to stimulate not only more attention to, but obviously more funding for this kind of research and answers to those very questions that you've posed.
Anything else you want to add before we wrap it up?
Well, you know, we were talking earlier about language, and many people don't like to label themselves as a survivor.
They'll Some people don't even like to say the word cancer,
right,
as if saying the word will make that tumor start to grow again.
Absolutely. And I think that certainly when the coalition adopted that language, it was not their intent to, quote unquote, label people, but rather to change the culture around care, to take away the stigma of having the disease, but also to say there's a lot of hope here involved and that people can lead very satisfying and productive lives after cancer. An important take-home message is that once you have had a cancer diagnosis, it is important to ask about what you can be doing to promote and maintain your health after these illnesses and treatments.
A patient is his or her own best advocate in this case.
Absolutely, and needs to be actively engaged in that, knowledgeable about it, asking those questions, what can I do, what do I need to know, how do I promote and ensure my health going forward.
A lot of reason to be optimistic, it sounds like.
Absolutely. 10.8 million survivors in the United States alone today, a very promising figure.
Well, thanks for being with us today and for sharing some of that optimism with us. Dr. Julia Rowland, Director of the Office of Cancer Survivorship at the National Cancer Institute, thanks for spending a few minutes with us today on NIH Research Radio.
My pleasure, Bill.